Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for January 14th, 2008, and on this episode, we have an interview with artistic director Alex Levy. He will be talking to Tom Williams about the 22nd Annual Young Playwrights Festival, presented by the Pegasus Players. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. We are at Truman College, sitting on the theater stage, and we're here to interview Alex Levy, who is the artistic director of something that I think is really worth talking about, the 22nd Annual Young Playwrights Festival. Hello, Alex.
Hi, glad to be here.
Great. Tell us about the what we can expect from the shows this week, and a little bit of the history of the Playwriting Festival.
Sure. Well, what a lot of people don't know, even if they've heard about the Young Playwrights Festival, is that it's a year-long project that we do here at Pegasus. We are in over 40 schools, over 100 classrooms all across the city, and we're introducing the art of playwriting to high school students, many of whom have never even seen a play before.
Wow. And it's a year-long... It's in the city.
It's in the city. So they're all students from Chicago, most of them public school students. And through a series of workshops and classes that we do, we encourage them to write plays, short one-act plays. They're usually about 20 to 40 minutes. And we received plays from almost 1,000 students last year.
Wow.
For the festival.
Congratulations on that alone. There's 1,000 kids who now know what live theater is.
That's absolutely right. In fact, there's more than that because every year there are about 5,000 students who come to see the festival. So that's 1,000 who've written plays, which is a great achievement. But we're also really proud of introducing their first play-going experience to so many young people as well with the Young Playwrights Festival.
Boy, we really need that.
Yeah, absolutely. Everywhere you go, you'll in almost any professional environment, you'll hear people complain that our theater audiences are growing older, that we're worried about the next generation coming in. And what we've found is they're actually very hungry for it. They just want to see stories that they can relate to, and they want to feel welcomed in the theater. And the Young Playwrights Festival does that, and it's an exciting thing to see.
So it's been around 22 years. You go into the schools. You give these talks on how to write, what theater's about, and some of the writing classes, right? And the kids submit writing.
That's okay. Right.
So then what's the next
And then
step?
There's a huge judging process that goes through many, many professionals. So the Chicago theater community has been great about supporting the Young Playwrights Festival, and so we have readers from all over the city. And it goes through three or four readings, and finally, through a long process, we come up with four winning young playwrights, and that's what's playing on stage right now for the month of January. And these four winning playwrights all have professional productions with professional actors, directors, designers, and they're all shown every night. So the whole evening's about 2 hours, and you get to see four short plays.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the plays. And one of the things that I liked this year, and I don't know if this is the first year, but they were all young women, weren't they?
They were all young women, which is, you know, it's exciting to see young people writing, and it's exciting to see young women writing. As you know, Tom, they're not represented in the playwriting world as much as we'd like, that we're not seeing as many women, and we're not seeing as many people of color either. And the Young Playwrights Festival has been really great about reaching these people who don't generally have a voice in theater. And so we've got these four young women who have all told stories from that perspective, I think, too, and told some really interesting
stories.
Okay,
let's go over them. The first one you directed, right?
I did.
Okay, tell us about that.
The show's called Daydream Nation. This one is a piece that is entirely sort of based on the sort of breakout indie album of Sonic Youth called Daydream Nation.
That's why I didn't catch that. That's where my age is showing, because I could. people were saying, well, it's this famous group, and I, you know, I was like the deer with the headlights. But it was a unique piece.
It's a really interesting thing. I mean, Sonic Youth is one of these bands that's lasted for almost 30 years now and has a huge following, but has never been a pop band, has never been super famous. And so they've sort of latched on with generation after generation of young people who are starting to push boundaries and starting to rebel a little bit. And the band itself has comforted a lot of young people, I think, over the years as they do this. And this show speaks sort of with that soundtrack in mind. It takes two of the songs, The Sprawl and Teenage Riot, and connects them through two short pieces, one taking place in a hotel at 3:40 in the morning on prom night, and one taking place in an abandoned home. And both deal with a lot of the issues that teenagers are dealing with now and have always dealt with, about pushing boundaries, about what their relationship to the outer world is like, and the fragility of their relationships as well.
Yeah, and I like the fact that in the second piece, they even got in about talking about politics in the sense of why should we care, and it shows that the youth today are starting to care.
They do,
which
care.
Is good.
I think that's one of the things that we don't give them. One of the things that I love about the Young Playwrights Festival is that there is a lot of time talking about what you think and what they care about and what speaks to them, but it's almost entirely presented from adults telling students that, telling young people that. The Young Playwrights Festival, we shut up and get out of the way and ask them what they feel and what they think about. And what people keep telling me is, oh, it's so amazing. I had no idea they thought this. People's parents tell me these things. And we have troubles listening to young people. We assume their world is like ours. We assume that that what they have to say isn't important, and they're hungry to talk about these things. And they have.
And what a better vehicle to have them express what they really believe, but through storytelling and live on stage.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the one thing that I find, and this is 12 years I think now I've been with the festival, is that. That continuously they think, the playwright said, I never really thought anybody cared about what I had to say. They didn't care about my world. And the Young Playwrights Festival tells them that we do care, that we do want to hear it.
Well, that's terrific. So that's why now I see why I didn't totally understand the first piece, is because it didn't speak to my gen. It speaks to their gen, which is what it should be.
And, you know, that's exactly that. And as excited as I am about having these four young playwrights, who all of whom, if they want to, I think can have a career in theater, what's more exciting to me is that there is material being created that speaks to that generation. There's a lot of theater that's out there for you and me, Tom.
Yeah,
there's not
that's
a
true.
Lot of theater that's out there for them. There's almost no theater that's out there for them. And especially in this sort of lost teen category. You know, we have some children's theater now. Mm-hmm. We have some adult theater, but we sort of have this big hole in the middle there.
That's so true.
And
yes.
That's important to us to try to pick up there.
Yeah, well, you're certainly doing a terrific job. Now, the next three plays. The one thing I think they all had in common was they were all telling stories not from their generation, but from their generation's point of view.
That's exactly right. I mean, one of the things that's really exciting this year, too, is that they are looking at different places in history, different places around the world, and they're connecting their stories to them. It's not that they're writing about things they don't know. I mean, it does take research, certainly, but they also are connecting their world to points in history.
Yeah, the one about Shakespeare.
Yeah, A Rose in the Royal Court.
Yeah, that was terrific.
So a fantastic play, Molly McAndrew from Northside College Prep, and she wrote a play that follows a young woman, Rosalind, and her courtship of William Shakespeare, and it is.
And she doesn't know it's Shakespeare.
She doesn't know.
Even
it's
though,
Shakespeare.
Of course, he was famous in his own day, of
right?
Course, yes.
But she is not. She's of a lower class. She's not aware of sort of that world, and she the piece is just very, very smartly told. The language is really beautiful. It's a riot. It's just very.
It is.
Very
it's funny. Very funny. She doesn't try and mimic Shakespeare, but it's written in the style.
It is.
Took some research.
One of the things that's really, I mean, we have had pieces that have used Shakespeare as sort of a base before, but I don't remember a young playwright using language as well as she does. You're exactly right. She's not trying to imitate him. She even says in her introduction to the piece that she did at one point try to throw in a lot more Shakespeare-sounding words, and it wasn't her voice, so she took it back out.
Yes.
And it's... But she has captured the language in a really beautiful way, and tells a really fun story.
Well, and her character, her key character is just so strong.
Yeah.
So it's big on character development too.
It absolutely. I mean, this young woman is from the second she steps on stage, she just captures us, and we fall in love with this story, I think.
Yes, we do. And so, but then we move on
to Coffee Girl.
Yeah, Coffee Girl. Tell us about that. Now, that's another unique piece.
Yeah, another interesting moment. This one also takes a look at a different place and time in history. It's taking place in 19th century America. It oscillates between the plantation big house and a slave quarter, and tells the story of a young girl and her relationship with the plantation owner's wife, trying not to give away the whole story in it.
Right.
But
it's very powerful.
It's an emotional
piece.
Very, very powerful story. And, you know, one of the things I think is really interesting about it, too, is it keeps everything human. Certainly, we live in the horror of slavery in it. But she doesn't make monsters out of the white slave owners either. We may not like them, but they stay human throughout it as well. We see their own repression, and we see hatred passed on because they're feeling their own fears as well, which we all know is where prejudice comes from. So it's a very smart piece, and it's written by Claire Richlewski, who is not African American, who did just an extraordinary amount of research and a wonderful job of capturing the voices of all of her characters as well.
Yes, that's so true.
And it's a tough show because not only is it a different time, a different place. Not only is it black and white, she's writing for a 10-year-old girl. She's writing for older women. She's covering a lot of different voices in it, and does it really well.
Yeah. Yes. There's a lot of craft.
Yeah. And absolutely.
Yes.
Right.
And I think so far, all three writers that we've talked about have certainly showing enough skill where if they go on with playwriting, I think they're going to have a career.
Yeah, yeah. We may have ruined these four women's lives. They could have been doctors or lawyers or something. And now they've
got plenty of
life in the arts.
Thank God. As long as they're not lawyers.
Right.
Doctors, I guess we can use. But all right. Let's go on with the next one.
Yeah, Laura Fernandez.
Yeah, this is an interesting piece.
She wrote a piece called Blooming Flower and Weeds. And Laura has done, again, it is a piece that is outside of her world. It takes place in the South, in the Carolinas, in a small sort of truck stop, and follows the life of a somewhat mysterious young woman who shows up there, and the world of that diner as well. And Laura is, when we talk about craft, I think is just an incredibly skilled writer too, because she manages to tell comedy and drama at the same time.
Yes,
she manages to control information so well, so that we get drawn into the story, and she lets little bits out and little bits out, so that by the time we've gone through a very complex story, we're just engrossed in it. And
in a fairly short time, because it's not a long piece. But it tells a story, and it plays like it's a two-act play in a way.
It does. It could be. It really could be if she wanted it to be. She does a great job of understanding structure of storytelling. And, you know, what's funny is not all of this is raw talent. I mean, we work with these kids. Their mentors work with them. But Laura looks at me when I tell her this and says, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, and you go, but you do. You haven't named it. You don't know the terms. You didn't set out to do it. But you have this raw instinct and this raw talent for it. And I can't wait to see them once they get some training and some craft into them, because they're already so good.
Yeah, and as long as they understand
to do that. Don't worry about the terms. Tell your story.
Yeah.
We can structure it and edit it later.
Absolutely.
Get the story out, because I know that's what hurt my generation was. We were so into everything had to be perfect grammatically and everything that it just killed creativity. They,
right.
they wanted us to be robots.
Well, that's what's so exciting about the Young Playwrights Festival is they have no rules to follow. They don't know the rules to start with. So
it's okay for a girl of Spanish descent going to Lane Tech to write about the Deep South in the Carolina.
Absolutely.
They don't know that they can't do that.
Absolutely.
And all she did was write in the style of Tennessee Williams or Ng or Sam Shepard. I mean, it's very much influenced by and she probably has no idea who those people
right,
are.
Right. That's absolutely right. They're just writing. They're just speaking from the heart. And by the time we get down to these four, they're just so incredibly talented. And I'd put these four short plays up against any festival, adult or youth in the country. I mean, I'm just so in awe of these four young women.
Well, you let's get into that because you've been with us for a while, haven't you? Besides, before the days when you were artistic director here at Pegasus. Tell us that now.
We used to have much lower standards for who won the Young Playwrights Festival.
Well, you were... tell us your background.
My introduction to both theater and to Pegasus Players was as a former Young Playwrights Festival winner.
Well, that introduced you to theater, too.
It really
did. So you
did.
Were one of these kids.
I was absolutely one of these kids. I understand completely how this festival affects your life. I was, you know, in some ways worse off than these kids in that I was not as, you know, some of our kids are very smart and very driven and very academic-minded. I wish I could say that I was, but I really wasn't. I was sort of goofing through school for a long time. I liked writing. I liked telling stories, but it never occurred to me that there was this whole world of theater out there. And finally, I had my experience with Pegasus and a couple good teachers who grabbed me by the collar and said, "Do this." And it changed my whole life.
You were one of the finalists?
I had one in the ninth festival.
Ninth, okay. What year was that?
That was, '94.
'94, so, okay.
Yeah.
And that changed your whole life.
It did. I went, just being around the environment of the theater, watching the actors work, watching the directors work, watching people fall in love with theater, watching people fall, the power of live theater. Not only did it make me want to do it, it made me want to do something well, you know? I mean, I wasn't really working in school. I wasn't really focused. And after that, I started doing better in classes I didn't care about because I wanted to succeed now, and I knew what I wanted to do. I went to college and worked my way through in professional theater all through there and was able to come back to Pegasus initially.
Okay, where'd you go to school?
University of Rochester in New York.
Okay.
And I came back here after working in Rochester for a little while and was given the opportunity to run the Young Playwrights Festival. That was my first job here at Pegasus, and got to see it all from the other side, got to go and work in the classrooms, got to work with the students. And that's another thing that I think is really great about the Young Playwrights Festival, and I can't explain it to you, but our playwrights stay close, and they kick back into the community. They know each other. They know people 5-10 years older than them that won the festival because it's sort of a fraternity. It's such a life-changing moment. You just want to help out the next one. You want to be involved with it more after your turn.
Well, that's terrific. I didn't realize that, but I can understand it. When you're affecting so many people's lives, I mean, one of the other things I see is for a lot of these kids, this may be the first real success they've ever had in anything.
Absolutely. Absent. For many, many of our kids, that's true. And many, many of our kids are the kids that are told that they're not going to succeed. You know, they come from backgrounds where they don't see success. Many of our kids aren't academically pushed initially. Almost all of them are after the Young Playwrights Festival.
Well, thank God that you never tell them that playwriting is probably the hardest thing. It's much harder than writing a novel. I mean, novels, narrative. I mean, there's skills, all this in short stories, but theater is the hardest thing to write, and any writer who's tried them all will tell you that.
It is, and these kids will tell you that. I mean, some of them might have had some experience writing a few short stories or poetry or some things like that, and they say, this is totally different and harder. But then the thing that I love is that then I ask them, well, do you want to do it again? They go, I can't wait. Now that I know what I know now, absolutely. And I'm so proud of that, and I think there is something to saying, let's give them the hardest thing to write. Let's raise the expectation. Let's tell them they can do it as opposed to telling them they can't do it. And what we see here and what's on stage here at Pegasus is proof that they can do it.
Well, you know, you meet kids who want to write for television or they want to write for for film, you know, screenplays or teleplays. And I've told them, and all the research, I think, backs me on this, you learn to write theater. If you can write theater, that's the hardest to write.
Sure.
Adapting to film or to television is so much easier.
Sure.
Same thing with actors, right? If you can do it on stage, it's so much easier than doing it on film or television.
Absolutely. And a lot of the plays we get initially from our kids read like movies and plays because that's what they know. We've done a really poor job of exposing young people to theater, and so they don't know it. But once they come see it, and that's what's really exciting in January, too, is that we'll have these kids who are writing for the 2009 festival here to see the plays, and watching them have that first experience. And you know, Tom, that first experience of live theater, it's like a drug. I mean, it's like nothing you've ever
seen. Well, I was 11 years old, and I saw Mary Martin flying around as Peter Pan. And ever since then, I've been involved in theater.
And that's exactly right. We all remember, have those memories. And what's sad is that too many of our kids now aren't getting that experience. So we're really trying to make sure that they do, and that when they come here, they're seeing stories that matter to them.
So besides your Friday, Saturday, and Sunday that's open to the public between now and through the 27th, you do matinees for the high school kids.
We do. Twice a week we're going to have matinees. Our first one is this afternoon, and there that is a recharge of one's batteries too, because watching these kids who are, you know, coming on a field trip, they don't know what they're going to, and even the kids who have seen plays before often get dragged to Shakespeare, which is great. They should get dragged to Shakespeare, but it doesn't register with them the same way the festival does. And for them to have that opportunity to see their stories on stage, there's a vibe in this room that is unexplainable.
Yeah, and it's got to be a high energy level.
It is super fun. It is not a traditional theater audience. You know, they'll talk right back to us. They'll be involved, but they're engaged.
Yeah, I know. Well, they were better this year, but I remember a couple of years ago they were like answering, and I felt it was bothering me. But then I thought about it. They were just so relating to what was going on. And I just,
one of the things I say to the actors on the first day of rehearsal is that that the Young Playwrights Festival is an incredible experience for the actors, because it is beyond the experiences that I've talked about. It's like a boot camp for them. They work with four different directors. They have to change characters on a dime. And they play in front of incredibly different audiences every night. So we're just
About them. There's several that I think are because that's one of the other advantages of this, is it becomes a showcase for actors. Not that you necessarily always use young actors, because there's some veteran actors here, but I saw two people here that I've never seen before, and I think they're both get fabulous potential.
Yeah,
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I know Victoria Capioli, who's just wonderful as our Rosaline and as our Julia. She's young actress who we're just super thrilled with. I mean, she's so engaging, so funny, so charming, and Santosha Chantal as well as our William Shakespeare. And but you know, the whole cast, and one of the things that's fun about the Young Playwrights Festival too is it's such a diverse group of people up there. I mean, it's all shapes and sizes and backgrounds and ages, and they form this great ensemble.
Yeah,
and
they do.
These four stories, and every year it's one of our tightest ensembles, and they are so driven to tell these stories for these kids and to tell them right. And you know, as good as our writers are, our actors, you know, meet them step by step.
All right, I got to ask you this. How much does the playwright get involved with the production? I mean, I know the directors do, you know, obviously, but how much do they?
A lot. Yeah. And one of the things that we've been able to do in the last few years is really make it's they don't know what they're getting into when they do this. We select our playwrights in June. Almost immediately, they're assigned a mentor, which is a professional playwright. And these are many of the leading playwrights in Chicago who work with them one-on-one. And
boy, that's amazing. That's that alone. You couldn't buy that kind of...
Yeah.
It's
great. A great experience that way. And then we start workshopping. We start readings. We the kids go through rewrite after rewrite after rewrite. So that by the time we get to auditions, they've already got a pretty solid script for where they want it to be. They'll sit through auditions with us. They'll sit through production meetings with us. And then they'll start rewriting again, and they'll sit through rehearsals and rewrite again. And that's one of the things that we beat into them all the time, is that playwriting is not about that first draft. It's about the rewrites. And that's something that's new to them. And there's a great...
So there's that balance between them being married to the words and in realizing that some of those words don't work, that you have to be flexible.
Sure.
And it is collaborative. Theater is all about collaboration.
Some of those words do work, but they have to go anyways, you know, that they may not be telling your story. And that's always the hardest part. I tell them all the time. It's if it's just about taking out the stuff that's not good, then that's easy to pick out. It's the stuff that is good, but maybe isn't in the right place or maybe doesn't need to be in this play. And that's but, you know, I talk to professional playwrights about that all the time.
Yeah,
too.
I have too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always the, but the theater is such a collaboration. So the experience of collaborating, collectively, working collectively to create a piece of art.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it's about.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And for us, it is not about taking these plays and saying, thanks, we'll show you a good play, but to bring these playwrights in as playwrights, that their job is not done when they submit the play to us, that they are professional playwrights now.
So even though they get a nice plaque and, what, $500, which isn't bad for a high school kid, it's not what you get, it's what you become.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right.
What happens to these plays now after this?
The plays they take different lives in many ways. We'd like to see them take even more, but many of them have been published. Some of them have been produced elsewhere around the country. But what happens to the playwrights is really incredible. We, for the 20th anniversary, we did a big catching up with everybody, seeing where they were now.
Okay.
And it was incredible. And you have to... It's incredible by itself, but when you keep in mind where these kids are coming from, where we have a 60% graduation rate in our public schools, 98% of them graduate from college, not high school, and a fourth of them...
Of the playwrights.
Of our playwrights.
Okay.
And a third of them graduated from graduate school, and a third of them are writing and directing and acting in theater, and
some of them are artistic directors.
Some of them are artistic directors. Some of them are published writers. Some of them are a great number of them are running their own not-for-profit organizations. And as impressive as all those numbers are, and it's an old festival in our mind, 22 years, but when you remember how young they were, the oldest playwright is not yet 40. So
that right?
When you think about the success they've had at in their young lives already, we're so proud of them.
Yeah, well, you should be proud of them. And when people say to me, well, why should I go see this? It's some high school kids writing. Well, it's just not that.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than that.
Absolutely.
For one thing, if it was only that, it's worth seeing because you want to hear what the next generation, we don't listen to them, want to hear what they're thinking about.
And, you know, I say all the time that for any other culture, we're suspect when outsiders are telling their stories. And yet for youth, that's all that's telling their stories. We see young people's stories in film, on TV, even on stage all the time, but they're always told by somebody who's older. You do get a different energy when it's told but from the inside, when they're telling you their stories. But more than that, and I say it, take the young off this, call it the Playwrights Festival, walk in these doors, I don't think you'll know the difference.
I agree. This is terrific. Theater, and I've seen just in the last few years that I've been covering it closely, I've seen them improve a lot. I think your mentor program has helped.
The mentoring has certainly helped. The workshop and writing has certainly helped, and our teachers in the schools are getting better and better at it. Alicia Duncan has come on staff and has spent a lot of time with our teachers. It's helped a lot, and you know, I have to say too that we've gotten a lot more support. That's allowed us to do a lot too. The W.K. Kellogg Foundation 2 years ago gave us a great deal of funding and they saw the festival, they fell in love with it, and they said to us, all right, tell us what your dreams are, let's see if we can help move you towards it, and they
That's
backed
terrific.
It up with the money to do it.
Because people don't realize that like your Pegasus Players is a non-for-profit, that the tickets is only what percentage of your budget?
The tickets in general for the company are very low. It's 40% of our budget, but what for the Young Playwrights Festival, because it's so important to us that it's seen by young people, we keep the ticket price around what it costs to see a movie.
Yeah, it's $12.
It's $12. You know, it's hard to see a $25 show in town these days.
Yeah, that's true.
So to keep it at the ticket prices so that nobody has reason not to be able to see it is important to us. And so tickets aren't paying for a lot of the show. We need to go out into the community and ask them to support us as well, and that's important to us.
Well, kudos to the Kellogg Foundation.
Absolutely.
It's better than than funding what birds are doing. And so I'm not that against all that stuff, but we need funding for the arts.
No, they're it's changing the lives of these students who are writing, but also of those of us who are singing their voices as well.
Now, you also have, I noticed in here, you have a reading series of playwrights that are writing in other languages?
We
Tell
do.
Us about that.
This started a few years ago. It expanded out of our Young Playwrights Festival. We were working with several schools, and the opportunity came up to reach into the language arts programs, the foreign languages in the public schools. And I was amazed at what languages are being taught in our public schools. When I was growing up, it was Spanish or French, maybe German. And now they're learning Arabic, they're learning Mandarin, they're learning just languages.
Polish, Russian.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And so we have connected our artists into those classrooms. We have bilingual artists who go in and the kids start writing plays in a foreign language, which is exciting by itself because it makes the language come alive for them.
And more than just kids who are native in that language, right?
Right. No,
these are people who are like you and I were learning it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
Right. So it makes the language come alive for them that way. And that by itself is exciting. But what's even more exciting is that we have now linked them to students around the world who are learning English. And so
kids
who are learning French are connected with a classroom in Casablanca.
That's part of your Global Voices?
That's our Global Voices program. That's right.
And they can get more information from your Pegasus Players?
You can go onto our website, pegasusplayers.org, and there's information there about it. And it's really, a very, very sort of revolutionary program because it's really bringing the world together. And one of the fun things, we have a classroom at Clemente High School that's learning Mandarin. And if you're familiar with Clemente High School, most of the students there don't speak English as first language. They speak Spanish.
Yeah, it's Spanish. They're mostly Puerto Rican and some Mexican kids.
So these kids,
they're learning Mandarin Chinese.
They are. So if we can help them do that, they're going to be able to speak English, Spanish, and Mandarin. And I keep telling them the world's open to them as soon as they can.
Yeah, especially for business. Everything's made in China anyhow.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is there any plans of maybe doing one of the Global Voices plays is part of this festival, even though it's in another language? Because, as you know, storytelling is movement and there's other things, too. So even if we don't understand Mandarin or Arabic, we could understand a play.
We do, absolutely. In fact, we're going to do that this year. We're going to wait till a little bit later in the year, but we're going to have readings. And what we're going to do is let the students perform those, actually, too, so that it will be students telling their own stories in Mandarin, in Spanish, and French, as well as telling some of the stories from our foreign counterparts who wrote in English.
That's terrific, because I've had the experience of seeing plays in Japan and some in Eastern Europe where I don't know if I got it all, but I got enough to leave with in my mind a story,
sure.
A complete arc of a story.
Sure, absolutely. We were very lucky to be asked to bring a show this summer to India.
Yeah, tell us about that. Thank you. I wanted to make sure I didn't forget that.
And I had the same experience too. Our show was in English, but not everybody's was. But the power of the plays there, regardless of language, was clear. Yeah, we brought a show of David Barr, local playwright, called My Soul as a Witness, and it was initially invited to an international festival in Chennai, and then was asked to tour the country. So we played four cities
in India,
all over India.
That makes you a real theater guy. Talk about going on the road.
Yeah, it was something, and it was pretty amazing. We played 2,000 seat theaters, and we played 150 seat theaters, and it was an experience that none of us will forget.
What was the reaction of the audiences to the American playwright?
It was phenomenal. You know, the show that David wrote is about the civil rights movement, and
I think I saw most of his plays. I think I know the play.
And the piece was a good, I feel, a good piece to be bringing abroad right now, because it came and it was very honest. It said, you know, our country has its own history of issues, and that we're not proud of all of our history, but that. Still, a movement can happen, and that people come together to bring change, and that particular movement, of course, was largely based on the movement that happened in India and the nonviolence that Gandhi.
That's true, because the civil rights movement did get their ideas from King, particularly from Gandhi.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. So the opportunity to bring to bridge that gap, and of course in India, that by us saying that, and you know, and many people told us that their audience, they thought the audience would be skeptical of us because, as you know, the American image is not at its best right now.
But thank God, hopefully that'll change.
But I think the arts do that. I think the arts bring people together. They make it about people. They make it.
Well, Pegasus has had a history of that. You took the Fantastics.
We did
to the Middle East, right?
To
Egypt.
We took the Fantastics to Egypt. We took it shortly after September 11th, and again, it was a fantastic opportunity for us to remind everybody that we have more in common than we do differences, and that we are people, and that we have the same concerns. And I think that's what art does. It puts us in the shoes of the other, especially theater, and that it brings the people together as much as anything.
Yes. Know? Well, Pegasus players should be very proud of this festival, as I know you are. And it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 8 o'clock, and Sunday's at 3.
That's right.
At the Truman College's O'Rourke Center, which is right off Wilson Avenue, right off the Red Line, easy to get to. And that's through the 27th, right?
That's right.
What do you have coming up the rest of the year?
We have two more shows left in our season. We have a world premiere production called Heat Wave by a local playwright, Steve Simoncic, which is about the 1995 heat wave here in Chicago.
Well, that should be interesting.
It's a fascinating piece, a really beautifully done piece, and just an exciting new playwright. Steve's done a wonderful job on that. And then we have the regional premiere of Golda's Balcony, one-woman show about Golda Meir that Janet Brooks will be.
Janet Brooks is a treasure.
Yes, she is.
Yes, and she just did Lillian Hellman in
she
a one-person
indeed.
Show.
She
yeah,
indeed,
and
yeah.
She is a treasure. She's one of our great actresses.
She's one of the great talents in the city and just a wonderful person. We're really looking forward to that show.
Yeah, that should be great. Well, Alex, keep up the good work, and you should be proud of your contribution to Chicago theater. So, folks, get out and see these young playwrights. And just forget that they're young. Come out and see some good one-act plays. Thank you for listening, and remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of January 14th, 2008. The Theater of Western Springs' annual winter benefit will feature Patty Duke returning to the TWS stage for Blue Yonder, running February 1st through the 3rd. Blue Yonder features a series of monologues, of which Patty Duke will perform three, while the rest are performed by actives of Theater of Western Springs. Patty Duke and her husband Michael Pierce have a long history with TWS artistic director Jack Phillips and his wife Debbie. The two couples have been close friends for many years and will now collaborate together again. Patty Duke is best known for her performance as Helen Keller in The Miracle Worker, a role that made her a Broadway star at the age of 12. Not only that, Patty Duke has starred in 11 feature films, 73 made-for-TV movies, and many television shows, including her own series, The Patty Duke Show. And if that wasn't enough, in 1985, she became the second woman to serve as president of the Screen Actors Guild, or as we prefer to say here, SAG. There will be four performances of Blue Yonder running from February 1st to February 3rd, each followed by an exclusive private reception with Patty Duke and the cast. In addition to Blue Yonder, she will participate in a live discussion interview on Monday, February 4th. All events will take place at the Theater of Western Springs in Western Springs, Illinois. For tickets and information, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The arrival of the acclaimed Broadway hit Shining City by Connor McPherson is coming to the Goodman Theater and will be directed by artistic director Robert Falls, whom McPherson handpicked to direct his play's Broadway premiere last season. Falls first met McPherson in 1992 while he was in Dublin directing the Goodman's production of The Iceman Cometh at the Abbey Theater. The two have been close friends ever since. Shining City will run at the Goodman from January 12th through February 17th. Set in present-day Dublin, Shining City takes place in the office of Ian, a former priest turned therapist. He helps his newest patient, John, who has recently lost his wife in a tragic accident, and reveals that he has been visited by the ghost of his dead wife. Shining City tickets are currently available at thegoodmantheater.org, or they can be purchased online through our links at talktheaterinchicago.com. Don't miss it. Broadway in Chicago presents the Tony Award and Pulitzer Prize-winning Rent, featuring Heinz Winkler as Roger Davis and Anwar Robinson as Tom Collins. Rent will be coming for a limited one-week engagement at the Cadillac Palace Theater from February 12th through the 17th. Rent is a phenomenon. This smash-hit theatrical experience about being young, learning to survive, falling in love, finding your voice, and living for today. Rent received its world premiere off-Broadway at the New York Theater Workshop on February 13, 1996, and it rapidly became a sold-out hit. Now, Rent is the seventh longest-running show in Broadway history. It stars Heinz Winkler, who is best remembered as the winner of the first South African Idol back in 2002. Anwar Robinson is the music teacher who was rocketed to television stardom on season 4 of American Idol. So remember, Rent is coming to Chicago for a limited and only one-week engagement at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Tickets are available through Ticketmaster.com or by visiting our website. Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before I let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare quote of the week. The following quote comes from The Tragedy of Romeo and Juliet, Act 5, Scene 3. Tempt not a desperate man. Well, you can feel the 2008 theater season already heating up, and hopefully the weather will too soon. That does it for this week's theater news. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Alex Levy for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.